I should have Bijo. I don't have a Bijo.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm here with Dave Hunter, who doesn't have a joke.
I'm sorry about that, Paul.
Yeah, it happens. We're, of course, Mason bees are what we talked about a little over a year ago, I think it was. And then I had all that lovely video footage that I lost of bee porn and other interesting bee things with Mason bees, which is now lost and gone forever. But today I came by, I got some new videos, so we'll hopefully get something going here real soon. I'll get some videos up, I hope, soon. And we've talked about a lot of things that have occurred in the last year. And it has been a rich year. We've been visiting about quite a few things. Of all the things that we've been talking about up to the podcast, what do you want to start with?
Probably the simple message, the biggest one out there, is that we're trying to encourage people. Try to encourage people to realize that they have a place in trying to raise solitary bees out here in North America. That too many people have been, they get stung, they're afraid of bees. They don't realize how vital bees are, and part two, how easy they are to raise. So that's probably the biggest message.
Okay. So Mason bees are the thing. We have a whole other podcast on Mason bees and the difference between Mason bees and honey bees. Now we're talking about, like, okay, what would be the easiest possible thing that somebody could do to just encourage a few extra Mason bees in their yard?
Before we get there, let's small little lecture, which was missing from the last podcast on bee kingdoms. Okay, we've got social and solitary kingdoms. The social kingdom is where all these bees talk to each other. There's bee dancing, and you've got queens and drones and nectar gatherers and pollen gatherers, 15, 20-some duties in a hive. The other side of the kingdom are solitary bees, and probably, I think there's more solitary bee species than there are social. And these guys, they're all, every female's a queen. Everyone's out there doing their own thing. And these the solitary bees live just 6 weeks and they're dead. So those two kingdoms are out there in three different spaces. You've got most of your socials are in hives. And they're up in the air. You'll see your paper wasp nest. You'll see your beehives or whatever. You've got probably 40% of the bees in the ground. Bumblebees, they're social, they're in the ground, but just a ton of bees are in grounds, and then the rest of the bees are out there in holes. So these bees are in reeds or tubes or whatever. So those two types of bees, social, solitary, in three areas. They're, you know, in hives, they're in the ground, and they're in holes. And so Paul and I have been talking just briefly about how can people encourage more bees in their yard. Do you want to get into scales, or where do you want to?
Well, I suppose one thing I'm thinking of is, quick recap, Mason bees are good guy. And so, one of the things we talked about before is that one Mason bee can pollinate about 100 times more than a honeybee. So it's kind of like they're far more efficient, and most of it has to do with they're more of a crazy-ass party animal than
they belly flop when they're pollinating.
They kind of belly flop and head off to a new party and belly flop, and they wander around randomly and belly flop and spreads pollen around a lot more than the bees, the honeybees, which are kind of like the nerds of the bee world.
And they're very efficient gatherers. Well, they're very fastidious. They grab the pollen off their abdomen and they lick it and they get on their back legs. They are snobs. They don't want to share the pollen with anybody. It's just back there for the hive. And your solitary bees, really, yeah, just crazy-ass bees. Belly flop, going to a different tree, belly flopping, coming back. They're kind of haphazard. But, man, do they pollinate. The scientists that I've talked with, 99.7% of the flowers they think they touch are pollinated, whereas a honeybee is about 15 a day.
So
2,000 to 15, roughly, flowers a day.
So the key is that the a few mason bees are going to do a lot more for you than an entire hive of honeybees when it comes to pollination.
Yep.
And so encouraging just a few more in your yard is going to be of great value, of great benefit. And so I from what little I know about mason bees, it seems to me that if a person in an urban yard could somehow help there be just even a couple of dozen more mason bees in their yard, that might turn out to be a big bump in overall crops.
True. If you're out there in your backyard, your bees are a solitary mason bee is out there flying 300 some feet. So not only are they pollinating your yard, they're getting your neighbor's yard, they're getting their fruit trees, they're doing everything. This is the spring bee we're talking about. There are other bees out there that are doing berries, other bees doing gardens. So they come out different times during the year. But again, most of these bees are out just 200-300 feet back to their holes. So they're a very local, regional bee.
So let us suppose, like, what's the simplest? So somebody is listening to this podcast right now,
right.
And you know, I got to admit, I know very little about pod people and how they listen to these things. But I imagine they're driving down the road or something like that, and they're going to add this knowledge. So this is a freebie. So then when
it's a freebie, nice.
Well, it's like, because you kind of think about it, it's like, okay, go look it all up and learn more. But it's like, okay, let's say what's something that they can do where it's like when they get home or sometime over the next couple of months, they're doing things in their yard. What's something that they could, like, they don't have any more knowledge than what's in this podcast? What's like a 15-second bit of information that they could take home, and it'll make a huge difference in their bounty next year?
Stop putting chemicals in your damn yard.
Well, I think the people listening to this are already...
I hope so. Okay. Stop your neighbor from putting it down. Oh, gosh. What I've even found...
Throw rocks at them. If you see them out there spraying, throw rocks.
I on my website, Crown Bees, I've got little pieces of paper you can print off and give to them. Your bees are flying 300 feet, and if your stupid-ass neighbor has... you know, a bathroom clean backyard. Damn them for doing that. It just kills the bees. So, all right. So, forget the chemicals.
So, yeah, these my guys are already not doing any chemicals.
I was talking to your neighbors, guys. Okay, the guys are neighbors. Okay, so, besides that, stop having a beautiful backyard. Beauty bark is exterior carpet. You know, bees can't go through beauty bark. They need to get into, you know, the ground bees need earthy, twiggy, leafy stuff left, and they're going to go in that. Bumblebees will go into wood piles. Just they go look in the woods.
What kind of wood pile do you mean? Not like a stacked wood, cordwood.
Isn't a stacked cordwood, but I'm just talking brambles. Let the damn things fall on the ground and the leaves that go over it. And mouse holes are perfect little things for bumblebees. Okay, you've got, go take reeds, whether it's Japanese knotweed or Phragmites is a noxious. Go just toss reeds in little piles into the backyard. Let those things there. You've got different types of bees that will go into, small bees will go into small holes. Big bees go to little ones. There's things called pith bees. You've got old blackberry canes, and these bees will chew out the soft part of an old, you know, 1-year-old blackberry cane. Leave that stuff in your backyard, and more than likely, you're going to, as long as you shot your neighbors with chemicals, more than likely you're going to wind up with native bees using holes. Okay, so. Besides that, the reason you've got bees, you're using them for pollination, whether it's your fruit trees in the spring, your garden in the summer. So in the summer, or I'm sorry, in the spring, you've got available mud. Spring bees need mud, and my website's got a little more on that. But later on during the summer, the bees pretty much take care of themselves, able to chew up leaves or cut holes in leaves, etc. So... to summarize my 30-second spot, 5 minutes later, shoot your neighbors with chemicals.
No. You get bullets.
Educate you.
I was saying throw rocks. That seems more organic.
Okay. Leave the ground as natural as you can. Provide pollen. And I'm learning. Provide pollen as much as you can, whether it's an aster type flower, so more of a daisies or sunflowers.
I keep thinking dandelions.
Yeah, is dandelion aster, or is it it's a composition flower? Or
I always thought it was an aster.
Is it?
I have no idea. I can spell aster.
So I mean
dandelions would be an awesome thing, and they're there all summer long.
And dandelions are a great plant in so many other ways too. So I mean, we've talked about in this podcast a fair bit about how dandelions are a great permaculture plant.
Right, right. So I'm going to say, for the lowest level, do that. You're providing ground. So you put holes in them, you know, the bees are going to find their own little tunnels in the ground, and these are solitary bees or social, or you've just got available reeds or pithy bundles, and you've just left them loose in the yard. That's your easiest thing to do.
So I kind of think a dry brush pile.
Sure.
Off in the corner or something like that, because I'm kind of thinking, like, not only is it good butterfly habitat and good habitat also for a variety of other lovely, lovely things, it might also be good habitat for snakes. They're going to help control slugs and a variety of other pests and beetles, but it seems like anything that's kind of reedy, anything that's kind of like a hollow, tubey kind of thing that dries out, that's going, I mean, and provide just a variety of sizes, that's going to help a lot of mason bees as well as other things for that next season.
And it's not all reeds that can get to be, you're looking for about a pencil size diameter. That's not easy to find, and those types of reeds are the ones that you'd be looking for the spring bees. There's a lot of other tinier bees. The pumila goes like in an eighth inch hole. There's a variety of sizes out there. So think that nature isn't a one size hole, you know.
True. I think the summary here is that if you just have this dry brush pile with reedy bits in it, that's going to increase your mason bee population right there.
Okay, and that's your level one.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you can do that'll help. I mean, there's other things you can do that'll make that are a little bit more guaranteed, a little bit more higher brow. There's more stuff you could do if you wanted to. I mean, if you started getting bonkers about it, there's lots of stuff that you can do. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm just kind of thinking, like, you know what?
Boundary.
If you just have this brush pile back there of dry brush, so don't compost it. But keep it piled up in such a way that no matter how much it rains, parts of it are going to stay dry, and it's not going to break down because it's up off of the ground, out of the soil. Just a dry, brushy pile. That's going to end up being a good habitat for a lot of lovely, lovely things, including mason bees.
I agree. Simple statement. That's going to probably attract the natural number of bees that could be in that acre. So I'm going to say naturally you might have 15 mason bees per acre. If you want to increase things, you've got maybe a dozen or so fruit trees, you've got maybe quarter acre plot of garden, you're going to need a bit more bees. So you've got to be a little more, you've got to manage things now. Because beforehand, just tossing the brush out there, you're just letting the bees do whatever the hell they want to do. And pests are in there, and that's down and dirty, not much work. If you're a bit more concerned and now you want to start managing things, yeah, there's another step. You've got to be a little more careful with what you're doing. You've got to put a little more holes. You've got to think pests through. You've got to think through a location of environment. There's a few things. So would be higher levels. And do we want to get into that now, Paul, or do you want to, where do you want to run with it?
Whenever you're ready, man, I just hold the little recording contraption.
You do that well. So what Paul and I were talking about earlier was with, you know, Seth out there being the 10, and Paul's now you're 8.5, or where are you at in your world?
Oh, I would say I'm a solid 7, maybe looking at 8 someday.
Someday, okay. So then he said, well, so Dave, what's the levels out there with mason bees, all these solitary bees?
That's a great question.
Okay. So is the number 10 slot currently open?
No, the number 10 slot is, baby, that is. I don't know where Sep is with B's, but it probably starts with a B. It'll be Ben not there someplace. Okay. Or Bob. Okay. I'm going to say if there's 10 levels, I am only a 6. Okay, so let's back hold it down to 0. A lot of people that there's only 5 bees in the world. The honeybee, the bumblebee, all wasps, all hornets, and everything else. And that's all I know. I just know there's 5 things, and everything that flies, it's a bee, and I'm scared of them. Level 0.
So we're going to the Dave Hunter Mason bee scale, okay. And at level 0, nobody gives a shit about bees.
Yep.
And at level 1, they've heard of Mason bees, and I think that's a lovely idea. At level 2... they might actually do something. They might make this little brush pile we just talked about.
Level 2 is a brush pile. Good. That's
level 2 is they've made a brush pile.
Actually, level 2 is I want to have more bees in my backyard, and I want to encourage native bees. So I'm doing something. I'm thinking about it, and I'm actually now getting off my ass and walking outside and moving things around.
You've provided habitat for probably 5 to 10 bees.
Good for you. Good. Level 2. All right.
There you go.
So level 3... actually, I'm no longer, I'm shifting from a pet owner. I just want bees in my yard because they're cute, which they are kind of, they actually are neat. But I'm shifting from a pet owner to I need a workhorse. I need something that's actually going to produce for me and pollinate. So now I'm a little more serious.
Going to put a little work in it, but, you know.
Not a lot of work. We're only talking level 3 here,
the,
right?
The brush pile, that was like 10 minutes worth of work.
That was the number 1.
That's number two. That's level 2.
Okay.
So level 3, maybe we're going to talk about an hour or two.
I've got an hour at this point.
Maybe even spend some money. You're going to maybe spend $20.
You're trying to do things a little better. You went to a website and you read up on these things. My website's got Crown Bees. It's got some stuff in there that actually it's organized. And
crownbees.com, is that right?
Oh, .com. Nice. Crown Bees. That's what www.
crownbees.com.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
That site's there to teach you. And to learn through there, and you can read deeply. There's 100 some pages. It's organized just to help you think out what to do. Okay, past that point, you've read, you're trying to do this thing. There's a little expenditure. You can go out and grab old recycled paper and wrap them around a pencil and bend in half, and here's a hole. Keep the hole dry, so you're going to put it in a bucket or something to keep it dry. Or on my website, I've got reeds, I've got these paper tubes, I've got wood trays that are there still, which allow you to harvest the bees in the fall.
So people could do it all at level 3, they could do the whole thing for free. They could do it all themselves. They could go get their own reeds, or they can get straws, or they can do all for nothing.
Yep.
Or, you've gone out and you've picked some,
yeah.
And you've very carefully selected it for certain species and stuff, and they can, but it seems like you sell it for really cheap, so.
I try to.
Yeah, and then they can have that if they want.
Okay, so you've done this, and you're letting still nature take its course. So you've thought through where to put these, looked at the website, and it's trying to catch good sun, keeping the place dry, making sure there's mud in the spring, or you've got leaf. Well, who cares about leaves in the summer? They're everywhere. The next level that would be that you're caring a bit more. We're hitting level 4. You're actually trying to increase what you're doing. So I'm actually now, I want more than 50 or 100 bees in my backyard. I'm actually looking to do a lot. So now...
You might even give some away to your neighbors.
You are giving, after a year, you're giving some away to your neighbors. This is too easy. But the amount of time we're talking here, 4 hours a year. Maybe in the harvesting part, you're going to spend an hour, and this is in the fall. Website teaches you, how to harvest your stuff, and all you're doing, you're working against nature now. You're separating the good guys from the bad guys, pretty easy. As you separate, you can open up any of these things that you had, your reeds or whatever. It's really easy. Here's cocoons. Here's not cocoons. A solitary bee overwinters in a cocoon. That's it. You've put the bees someplace. Website shows you where. You could keep them in your fridge. You won't have them last long, or you could keep them in your shed. Keep them away from rats that are looking for good food. But that's all you've done. You've taken that one extra step, and you're now trying to make the bees go further. Around Christmas time, share your bees with your friends and neighbors. Teach them what to do. That'd be level
five.
Four and a half, five.
Five, okay.
Because you're spreading knowledge. You're actually getting a little better.
Because now level five, I kind of think that those are, because you said you're level six.
All right, maybe I'm six and a half. But
you're saying, it sounds like there's a lot of people that are helping you out. They're like sending you stuff, and you're sending them stuff, and you're networking, and you're like building, you know, knowledge in your area and stuff like that. So level five is like you're kind of, this is your thing. This is a big part of who you are.
Right. I'm going to say that, so by the time you hit six, what are you doing? You just, you know, just a little more. I know a lot about a tiny little insect. Up your level sevens are your scientists, if I can say that. Seven to eight that just truly, but what are those guys? Maybe I stopped at 10.
Well, you might have some scientists that are level three. They got their fiefdoms and they don't want to like share but it's like, you know, because whoever's at level 10 in the world of Mason bees.
I'm going to say there is no level 10.
Okay. All right. So the spot's vacant at the moment.
Yeah,
or
if I was seven, I'm going to say it probably dropped off because it's such an easy little thing. It stops off at six. If you really, level seven is open.
Level seven. Okay, all right.
Level seven out there, and I think I'm gonna call it right now, Paul. There is no level eight.
But well, there needs to be people at levels eight to ten. But
oh,
we're,
God,
we're, there's
teach
just
me,
so much.
Please. Teach me.
Okay.
All right. So I want to be taught. So right now, as I'm teaming with whoever from whatever university or whatever bee lab. Everyone's still, even a year later, still saying, rut-row, it's still not going well. People are still trying to determine what's going on with the honeybee, and they're closer, but they're still saying, we really don't know what's causing all these things. There's some easy ones, but they still don't know what's causing.
You saw my video, right?
I saw your video, and I think those are the scientists level three. Are watching the videos at level four. That must be the problem. And all of your honeybee contractors driving home right now listening to this thing, you're probably pissed off me. You should be changing your tune, dude. You guys, you know, whoever you are out there, there's some good stuff that you probably don't know. Okay, with that statement there, if the honeybee is needed in large volumes, then there needs to be other bees to help supplement your orchards, your backyard gardens. Can you do that? And that's what I'm trying to do, is to find these other bees. I've got four bees that I'm becoming, well, one I'm level six at, the other two or three I'm maybe a level three. My intent is to teach, these are national bees, the leafcutter bee. Californica is a West Coast bee. Coloradensis, these are all kind of West Coast bees. They come out at different times. People have them in their yards. I want these people to learn how to raise them and share them with other people. I'm just, Paul, I think people understand, and I'm gonna say this, maybe they don't. We've been talking about plants forever. We know that plants need to have dirt, and we need to have the right water, moisture. You need sun. And people just forget you need fucking bees. I just forget that. And it's people take bees for granted. And we've got to, with this crazy world of ours, we've got to start paying attention. That's probably the message. Pay attention.
Right. And then, so, you know, I mean, the fight against the pesticides and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I know that I've grown tired of it long, long ago. And so that's a lot of stuff I talk about is advocating, you know, homesteading. So you get onto some acreage. At least that way, then, you know, you have fewer neighbors that are going to be bringing problems to you in the form of pesticides. Because it's true, the bees, the honeybees have a range of 2 miles, and then so it's like everything within 2 miles. There's always going to be something that
bumblebees got an 8 mile range, and the more solitary bees, they will nest within 200 or 300 feet. So if you can keep them around, you can keep them pretty clean.
Right, there you go. So
another part I just want to bring in is you've got a lot of people out there buying stuff. Good for them. So people are out there selling stuff. Make sure that you're buying a bee that's good in your neck of the woods. If I'm in Florida, I shouldn't be buying polar bears. If I'm on the East Coast, I shouldn't be buying a West Coast bee.
Well, shouldn't we just... I mean, are people selling the actual bees? Are you selling actual bees?
I am selling actual bees. I've raised these bees, and I'm sharing them with as many people as I can.
Okay.
So I'm raising bees, and I have two sets of bees, East Coast bees that are raised in Jersey and Ohio and Maine and wherever, South Carolina. And then I've got West Coast bees that are indigenous up and down the coast. So I've got bees that I'm selling to... Yeah, that's profitable. Bees that I'm selling up and down the West Coast and bees I'm selling on the East Coast.
So now I would think that if you just, had the tubes and whatnot or whatever and a nice buffet of tubes sitting
and
outside.
Pollen and whatever.
Right.
Build it.
That they would show.
Build it and they'll come. I'm going to say yes. My hundreds of thousands started from 3 holes. So building in the Northwest, it worked just fine. Not everyone can wait for that amount of bees. And so I'm homesteading. I've planted my 30 or so fruit trees. It's going to take me to get enough bees for those fruit trees a good 6 to 10 years of trying to build them. So, sure, build them, they'll come. And, actually your neighbor, John, next door to you, has been homesteaded for 20 years, and he's given you the bees already. So it was a Christmas present. If you don't have the bees... then you've got to find them. And there's been enough bee decline that I think a lot of species are few and far between.
How much do you sell bees for?
They're about $1 something a bee.
So I'm in Montana,
mm-hmm.
and I have 100 fruit trees,
mm-hmm.
and I've got a honey hive or two. So, what do you suggest for me?
Two different statements. What we've learned is that honeybees pollinate differently than other bees. And when you have an and situation, honeybees and a native bee, you actually wind up with more fruit. So your fruit production is better. So honeybees, and when you are done, so you've got 50 trees, you need maybe at peak 500 females, 400 females, which would be a boatload amount of money. I'm going to tell you to start with 20. And those 20 in a year are going to be 40 or so, and then another year it will be 80 or 100 or so. So it's going to take you 3 years to get there.
Okay.
I would never... So those 20 is $25 worth of bees. I would never recommend going in and just buying a whole pile of bees. I think it's a waste of money.
Okay.
Yeah. Because what I want people to do are make mistakes. Start early, make mistakes. You killed them all. Go back to my website, call me up, and we're chatting or whatever. I'm going to help you think it through. Try it again. Don't do what you did the first time. You didn't shoot your neighbor,
Or even throw rocks at
him. Or even throw rocks at him, exactly. Yeah. So to answer your question, whether you went out and got your own reeds in your house or you've bought bees and you're in starting on a backyard for 30 or so bucks. If you're in an orchard, I'm going to try to keep you down to 100 because your money's important. And if I sold you a whole bunch of bees, you're going to screw it up the first year. And I say that it's just a bee, but you should always, I think, start small and make mistakes.
So now, part of what you, I know we just took a bunch of video at where you've got that teardrop-shaped fascinating little shelter-looking thing, and it's full of straws. And we were watching the mason bees come and go from that. And so I suppose one thing you could do is you could, you know, buy one of these little fascinating pieces of art, fill it full of straws, which would be reeds, and then critters will show up. They'll come, they'll go. Probably even within the first 365 days, you'll probably see some life going on in some of those reeds.
Yep.
And you'd be underway.
And it's not bees. Someone was emailing me, Dave, hey, what's this thing going in and out of my holes? Well, I'm looking at it, and it's something with wings, and it's got an abdomen and stuff. I think it's a wasp. Well, what's a wasp going in and out of these holes? Well, that wasp is a beneficial wasp, and he's out there probably grabbing caterpillars or spiders or something else, stuffing them into holes, paralyzing it, laying some eggs, and then separating it with something. And so I said, leave it alone. You're building a wasp habitat. Good for you. You know, so it's not just mason bees. You're going to find other cavity nesting hornets. I don't really know what they do in the world. I don't really know. I'm not really a fan of hornets. But wasps, I'll buy wasps. I think those are good. We've got mud daubers out here. They grab spiders from my yard and just, sting them. And those spiders are still alive months later, just perfect food for their larvae. But so leave them out. There are problems when you leave things out. Nature's trying to fight you. Birds are going to go out there and peck at the ends of the tubes. You've got predators will go in there. I've got some. You're now at the sixth level. I want you so successful raising your different three or four species of bees. I've got some rules. Between these bees are typically coming in at different times of the year. Between the seasons, take out the full stuff, kind of protect them. That's a little higher level. And so you're now maybe marking that these are my March and April tubes filled. And these are my May and June tubes filled. And I noticed the end of them, this is leaves, and this other end is chewed up leaves, and this one's mud. Well, yeah, you had three different bees in there. So to pull them out of the environment, has your flickers and woodpeckers not getting a quick snack? So I'm being a little more careful. Maybe I've hung some chicken wire over the front of this. Maybe I've put a little hardware cloth or something like that just to keep the rodents out. And I'm doing a little more upkeep.
So you might be thinking to yourself that, I would like to have 500 mason bees because I have so many apple trees and so many gardens. So kind of want to end up at 500, and right now we're only at 50. So let's do something to help protect these 50 and get them through the winter as opposed to being bird food. And then once we get up to 500, well, then, survival of the fittest and all that.
And share them with your neighbor.
There you go.
That's the problem.
So if they don't have, if you've got a farm and you've got like 100 fruit trees and you don't have any honeybees at all, now of course, there's honeybees finding you and there's other mason bees finding you and stuff like that. But then is it possible, I'm just going to make a wild ass statement here and you can tell me how wrong I am. But if I have 100 fruit trees and then all of a sudden I brought in 500 mason bees and I know what I'm doing.
Right.
Will I double my fruit production?
Yes. Yes, you will. Give or take nature. And I'm now shifting into the commercial monoculture almond industry. As they're trying to hit level 7 or 6, wherever they're at, it's important for these guys to get as many mason bees as possible. And so a couple years ago, you'd put 500 out and get 400 back on 1 year because it's raining or whatever, and the next year you put out 500, you got 600 back. They're really fine-tuning what we can do to make these bees more successful. Mud, the specific type of mud is really important. Out in Bakersfield, they went out and grabbed 4 barrels of mud from different sections of Bakersfield. And real funny, we're now talking hundreds of thousands of bees out there, all going to 1 barrel of mud. Well, why is that? The bee's kind of fastidious and wants one type of mud. So they're thinking that through. Bee attractant. They've analyzed the pheromones and, so the high level, people are really trying to be to think through. So to answer your question, can you double your bees? Yeah, you should be able to double your bees in an orchard pollinating with, you're not doing a monoculture. You've got organic cherries have started off, your plums have started off in cherries, and then pears, and then apples, and whatever. You have 6 weeks of pollen out there. You should easily double your bees. You're not spraying pesticides.
Double your bees or double your fruit?
You're going to double your bees, and your fruit production. These bees are actually kind of commercial apple orchards don't really want the mason bees out there. These guys are unbelievable pollinators, and these guys are typically thinning their apples. You put even honeybees out there, they're spraying thinner because they only want to have the big apples, and so they're trying to get the weaker pieces off there. And so with the mason bee, every single flower is pollinated, and you're going to wind up with little apples. You might have to thin your apples unless you're making juice with them or whatever. But the same thing's going to happen with cherries. Back in the 80s, they did a big study, and they were looking at just the tonnage of cherries off X amount of acres out there in Utah. And 5 years of honeybees, then only 5 years of mason bees. And those second 5 years had them doubling and tripling the yield of cherries. So this is me 3 years ago just trying to analyze, well, should I be even getting into this? The question I started asking the scientists is, what the hell's wrong with all these cherry farmers? If you can double or triple your yield, why aren't you using mason bees? And Bill Kemp, awesome entomologist out there in the world, I think he's out in Spain now doing whatever, his answer was, Dave, farmers change at the speed of a glacier. Either there's only one way of doing things, and this is what my dad taught me, this is what my neighbor taught me, and for me to go out and change a variable, you know, I got weather, I've got fertilizer, I've got labor, all these things that go into commercial farm keeping, for me to introduce a different variable, change it from a honeybee to something else, I'm going to wait till my neighbor does it. And
right.
he said, Dave, it's that. He said, there's a couple places in Utah that they're lying really low because they keep on getting more cherries than anybody else, and they're not saying anything. And I think that's going on. In fact, I could tell you.
If you told everybody, the price would go down.
The price would go down, baby, and that's not what they want. So you will be able to double your bees and pass them off to your neighbor. It's a good bee. That's the spring bee. When you're out there doing leaf cutters, these guys are, these are now 30 cents a bee. There's millions of these leaf cutters out there, all out in alfalfa. These guys are general pollinators that come out, they fly in the 70s and 80s. The only problem with a leaf cutter is instead of using mud inside their holes, they're using leaf bits. And so if you got your heirloom roses right next to your bees, there's going to be cool little circles cut out of all the holes, out of all the leaves. And you're going to have holes in your leaves if you get leaf cutters. But there are wonderful pollinator of peas and melons and cucurbits, and you know they're great. So those are native. I've got them for sale on my website, but I think you could encourage those as well, starting locally.
What else we got on your list there? We got lots of other stuff to talk about.
No, actually, we kind of hit towards the end. This was an easy one. Talk a little bit about mud. I learned just this is back to the Blue Orchard, the spring mason bees. What did we learn from last year to this year? I kind of started the thread. This was we learned with blueberries. Last year there was a farm in California trying to get blueberries early, and so they had this big tented enclosure, acres and acres of blueberries, and they put in a leaf cutter. Into this tented environment, so they kept the bees right there, and it was warm enough under this tent awning. And what they found is that the bees would sit on the flower and go back to these holes, but they wouldn't nest. They weren't going back and forth and nesting, and so it was a dismal failure. Well, they analyzed at the tail end that the blueberry leaves were too tough for the leaf cutter to cut a hole out of. Huh. Okay, so now this is me. kind of plain little intuition. So in other words, if I've got a backyard now out here in the Northwest that's all asphalt and beauty bark and lawn, and I've introduced this spring bee that needs mud, this bee's not going to nest any, you know, anywhere. So it's going to go. So you really need mud. All right. So I went out and took a whole bunch of mud we found, and my niece was a geology student out at the University of Washington, and she analyzed this mud, and boy, it was very specific. Kind of, you know, I then told my, it was very specific. No beauty bark, no large grains of sand, very, very specific dirt. And the mud that I tested was from a four-hour, you know, 15 different people in four-hour radius of where I'm at. So I went out and told the almond industry, and there's the four barrels. But what I also learned, in the Northwest, this is 2012, had a wonderful, very warm spring. The rain was just kind of quick in and out. And so my production of bees, I've got a lot of people raising bees for me, was probably, I'll probably get triple the bees. Okay, great year. But I made a mistake, and I had, 20,000 extra bees just sitting down in a cooler. These are all in a cooler in the basement. The hell do you do with 20,000 bees? Because if I put them out at my house, there's not enough pollen to support 20,000 bees. So I asked a whole lot of the people around me. Actually, I have statistics on all of my people I give bees to. If I gave you 100, I got 50 back, or I got 200 back, or whatever. The people that were heavy producers of bees, every year I gave you 100, I got back 300. I gave you 200, I got back 800. I interviewed them. Actually, I had all, hey, come on back over to my house, I've got bees for you. 95% of probably a good 80 people, you know, so I'm saying 75 people, all came back saying, in my backyard, I have pond, swamp, marsh, waterway, spring, horse pasture, all of these things all said mud. And it's, I think, the number one, you know, give or take, you got to have a dry hole, you need to have a house, you need to have pollen. If you don't have the correct mud, moist mud in your backyard, you're going to have a tough time raising them. That's a level six.
For okay, sure. Right. So most people, the people that are at level two that are just going to make a brush pile, they don't even worry about the mud. There'll probably be some mud nearby, but maybe not.
And then their bees will or won't come.
Yeah.
The level threes. Level threes, I'm going to stop it here. Level three, go out and take a shovel and just dig a hole someplace that's got kind of clayey mud. Just dig a hole down a foot and put the bees near that. And if it's springtime, it's going to be moist. The bees are going to go into that hole and tunnel and find the right dirt.
There you go.
Real simple. Hole in the ground. And you've probably helped your little bees out. If you have sandy, silty soil, go find a different bee. Or now we'll hit maybe level four. You got to go out and go down to the river and import your mud.
Mud. Well, Matt, you started off talking about the blueberries and the leaf cutter.
Fail.
So, but then the leaf cutter, don't they need leaves to mash up and make their mud?
The leaf cutters cut circles and leaves and roll these circles up and fly them into the hole and stuff them back there. So I think five or so leaf pieces stuffed into a hole. Then they go out and get their pollen, lay an egg, and then put five more leaf pieces out there. So they're just using leaf bits. But with the blueberries, the leaf was too tough for them to cut with their mandibles.
Right.
And so they didn't nest. They didn't, you know. So
it didn't work out at all.
Didn't work out at all. Failed. Absolutely.
So, but they don't look for mud. They don't. I mean, the leaf cutters don't use mud.
And a leaf cutter is a later on summer solitary bee. And there's no mud in the summer. So these bees naturally evolve, and they're going to use whatever pieces they can find. So they're using cut-up leaves that are available. Other bees will gather softer, I don't know what they're using, dandelion leaves, masticate that up and use a little saliva and stuff in that back there. I've got a bee out here in my backyard that I think it's a deep summer bee. It's using resin from trees. And I don't know which tree it's gathering the resin from, but you look in this little hole and there's just a whole bunch of little bits of dried up sap, tree sap.
Now, we talked about level six at one point, I think before the podcast, and it seemed like the one thing that you wanted to get more of is you wanted to get more people that were as keen as you
networking.
And so then people that were like, you know, saying, okay, what kind of bees are we raising in our area? And what kind of bees are we finding? And they're getting the bees properly identified. And they're propagating the bees and sharing the bees and amongst each other as well as their neighbors and things like that. So doing kind of like what you're doing.
They're learning from each other and they're networking with each other, whether you're whatever community you're in. I'm exchanging information so you can be successful. And I'm giving you bees. But I've got a little, where do we get these pockets of people, regional? I don't want a West Coast bee out in Ohio, but I want a bunch of Ohioans. That's the right word? Ohioan?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, those guys. I want those Ohioans to...
Ohio monsters.
Yeah, them guys. And gals. I want those people through a forum Paul talked about, through something, and I'm Paul and I talked beforehand how I might be modifying my website or using his website to exchange data. You know, how do you get that going? And this will be years in the making because we don't know all the bees across America. But if you've got, and I say this real seriously, and this is the tail end of the podcast, if you've got bees using tubes that you don't know what the heck it is, give me one of your tubes. I've got a team of scientists from the University of Florida and out there in Beltsville that I can give the bee to them, have them tell you what it is. It's a whatever. And here's what it should be nesting on. I want you successful. I want, you know, if there's already some data out there, let me find that data for you. So that starts a little community of Pumila raisers. And, you know, Pumila is a bee in the Northeast. Here's some available data, now go start your forum. You know, I shifted you from level 0 to level 3 with a little bit of scientist stuff, but, you know, let's ID these bees. I, on Crown Bees, you can hit me at info@crownbees.com, coordinate with me, and I can get you that thing ID'd and, you know, get you going with your little community, would be my thought.
We'll get a forum set up at Permies.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can choose to use it or not. And I think that's part of what it should be is to help get things networked together like that. So we'll make sure there's a forum that's going to be called Mason Bees. I mean, are all these bees Mason bees?
That's a good question.
Tube bees.
These guys are, a Mason bee is a cavity nesting bee, and there's 130 species of Mason bees. So, yeah.
Mason bees
would be a good, but there's, for now we'll call it that. Mason bees is a good answer. It's when I say cat, everyone knows what a cat is.
Right.
Yeah. So when I'm saying Mason bees, it's a bee that goes in a hole. All right. We'll leave it there. And later on,
holy bees.
Later on, we'll learn that it's a Siamese bees or a, you know.
Mason bees is a good place to start, though.
Yep.
So we'll call it Mason bees, and then the idea is that what we want to do is we want to help people move up a level in their Mason beedom,
mm-hmm.
and then at the same time, hopefully, we'll start discovering level 6 people at some point that are going to help build networks in their regions.
Yeah, and the part where we talked is where do you get your level 1s and 2s? I think my website's going to start the basics. I'm going to have, you know, 30 or 40 bees that you can go in there, and it's going to change. I'm going to translate it scientistese or entomologies to people language. So the 1s and 2s would be there. You know, you can learn about what you've got. And then now to network the community is where we're coming. Because your website have all the pictures and the how-tos.
You can post pictures.
Wow.
People post pictures all the time. Hugel culture, we have like a couple of hundred pictures of Hugel culture beds that people have posted.
Is it organized enough that you can find the stuff?
I think it is, yeah. Yeah.
I've never seen your site. What's it called?
Bastard.
You said it last year. If you look at my last podcast, Dave, I hate to say it, I've never been to crownbees.com. I hope it's okay.
Yeah.
So I'm just back at you, bud.
Yeah. I know you've been out there. I know I've seen you post out there. Yeah, you have.
Okay, all right.
You have. But yeah, you can post pictures out there. You can embed YouTube videos, all that stuff. So all I'm thinking is, like, this is a path to kind of get things going. And then I think another part of it is, like, when you talk about level zero, it's like people at level zero have never even heard of mason bees. They have no idea that there exists a mason bee.
The bees don't sting. Right. There's something out there that they don't know. There's five bees.
So then I kind of think, like, okay, so like if you could go on to any television show that's currently out there, what would be a television show that you think would be like an awesome fit? Like you get to take your pick, whichever one you think has the biggest audience, that'll be the most receptive to what you're doing. And then it's like they're going to interview you for 7 minutes to talk about mason bees, and now people are going to go, just by hearing you talk, they're going to go from level zero to level one. What's the show?
Ted.
Oh, a TED Talk.
Yeah, I think TED Talk is the right one.
That would be a good one for you.
Yeah.
And talking about mason bees.
I don't watch much TV, but so if I were to, I think TED Talk is the right one.
And I would think at this point in time that you would be the guy to do the TED Talk. Who else, if not you, who would be the guy? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So weird, isn't it?
I was going to go on PEG. I know a couple scientist people that I think Jim Kane of the B Lab in Logan, Utah, one top-notch scientist, and he's probably, I'm going to call him a 7. He knows
so
good stuff, and he knows so much good stuff about a lot of things. But he's a good nut. So Jim Kane would be the one I might have on in front of me.
Okay, all right. You'd be a nice plan B, though.
I'd be a great plan B.
So, which in B's might be, B might be better.
A joke. We finished with a joke. So yeah, be there. Be all that you can be.
So, I don't know. It seems like you're reaching out to the community more, perhaps.
From last year to this year, last year was trying to teach people that here's a website. I think I've gone past the website. It's a good foundation. I'm now trying to network the gardeners. I've got a hidden nasty agenda that I still feel sorry for the monoculture farms out there.
Right, they are.
Okay. I feel sorry for them. And in X amount of years, they need 100 hives for their 100 acres, and there's only going to be 70 hives. They're going to need some extra bees so that you can go down to your local store and get cherries or apples. Okay, so they're going to need, if this food chain is there, I feel sorry for these guys. What I'm trying to do in the long run, your extra bees, I'm going to coordinate and get to those orchards. I'll have a mechanism to do it, and you're so successful in whatever bee you're raising, I'm going to help get your extra bees to your regional commercial crops. And maybe by then, the permaculture message will be through, and there'll be, you know, a better way to farm rather than spray pesticides and stuff that kills off bees. But there aren't enough bees to get this done and to start your followers, your masses, to think this one through is the right way to start.
Right. But I think we need to get more people going from level zero to level one. So I think a TED Talk would be good. So I don't know how to make that, but maybe somebody is listening to this podcast.
Maybe they know TED.
isn't TED like it's just an organization, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, it's not a dude.
It's not Ted Turner or anybody special like that. Ted Nugent. Yeah.
No, that seems unlikely. But yeah, maybe somebody knows how to get somebody into a TED Talk, and it does seem like the Mason Bee thing would be very powerful as a TED Talk. That would be a very good TED Talk.
And just enough to educate the. You want to educate people. You want to start young. Actually, I'm working out with the Montana curriculum for high school. The science curriculum writer reached out to me and said, "Hey, Dave, can you help us write curriculum for the Montana high school systems?" Huh? Sure can. And so I'm working with her just lightly to try to educate the kids on what's pollination, what can you, be aware of the bees out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if it finishes and if it's a good enough unit, but people, Montana is a state that's progressive and going past and try to think probably holistic science.
Wow. Wow. Hey, I live in Montana.
Yeah, you might listen.
That's cooler than I thought.
Yeah, I've actually got to get, I say that. She and I spoke last October. And so I've got to maybe dust that one off to help her out.
But you haven't finished it yet?
No, what's wrong with me?
Kids trying to learn about bees.
No.
You're holding up the show.
I'm holding up the show. But to educate the kids, that's always, you start there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. But and at the same time, though, I think that it's like, how can you get this out there faster? How can you get this? So, yeah, TED Talks is good. That would be a good one.
I know my kids. And my kids are in college, but they, in high school, were watching TED, because it's just well-done stuff.
Yeah.
What else? You tell me, where else is there a TV show?
I don't know. I just thought, somebody asked
America.
Me that. Somebody asked me, and I said The Daily Show. But,
I don't watch TV.
I don't watch news. I don't own a TV. Look, I see one. You got one right there.
Did I tell you how long ago it was turned on?
No.
I don't know either. I don't remember.
It's
been a long time. Yeah.
I haven't owned a TV in years, but I'll every once in a while I'll turn on the computer.
That's a big computer monitor, Paul.
It's true. Bigger than mine.
Yeah.
And I every once in a while I go to Hulu, and it's like Hulu's picks aren't all that great, but they do carry The Daily Show.
The Daily Show.
And so I'll watch that once in a while.
Actually,
probably like once a month I'll watch it.
Science something, how do you? You know, I'm sure there's how do you shows.
I don't watch any of those though. YouTube.
Yeah, you write your own.
You're the guy. Well, what I do is like a lot of times I'll go and I'll say, okay, is there a video about this? And then it's like usually there's not.
So then you go create it.
And then I'll create it. Or there will be one, but it's like not covering enough. And so I'll cover more. There's that, and then on top of that, I just go, as I travel around, I encounter interesting things, and it's like, ooh, I should put that out there.
Let's get that one out there, yeah, I know, I agree.
You know, so, but, I don't know, so when I kind of think, how many people watch these different shows, and it's like, all I see is, the only one that I see that's anything close to a show that's like, where I could potentially be interviewed, is The Daily Show. I don't know what other shows are there that are on now. I mean,
The Ellen Show. I mean, I only can surmise.
Right. I saw.
Oprah,
I think Ellen Page on her show, and she talked about permaculture, and a big part of permaculture was peeing in a bucket. And
I'm sure that it probably had a lot of.
Well, and it seemed like there was a lot of focus on that because I think Ellen just wanted, of course Ellen's a comedian.
She's funny.
And so she's going to focus on peeing in a bucket a lot. So that went on and on and on. But I understand. So I learned recently that Daryl Hannah has apparently taken a PDC from, I think, Jeff Lawton. And so now we've got two celebrities in the permaculture world. And it's like,
So if you know anybody who wants to, if you know either one of those producers for the Daryl Hannah show or...
Well, I don't think Daryl Hannah has a show.
Oh,
she's just an actress.
Oh, she's an actress on...
You ever seen that show that was Splash?
Splash.
Yeah.
With the spoobs that were...
Spoobs?
That was the Saturday Night Live. They could say boobs on TV, so they kept on laughing and having... they're talking about spoob because it boobs backwards. That was aging myself.
All right.
Yeah.
I think it was Splash, and then she was in that Kill Bill. Man, she was pretty creepy.
So she's now doing
that.
Science things?
Killing Bill is science?
No. You're saying Daryl Hannah, the actress, is doing what for permaculture?
Oh, all I know is that she took a permaculture design course. The two-week intensive thing.
Oh. Well, there you go.
And so now that she's done that, then now we've got two celebrities. We've got Ellen Page and Daryl Hannah.
I get it.
And so now it's kind of like, I don't know, they're celebrities, right? So they get on these shows. So they got on Ellen DeGeneres' show and said the word permaculture. And Ellen Page also got on that show with a mayor, Bill Mayer. He's some sort of political commentator and she mentioned the word permaculture a couple times. It was on YouTube. I just know it because it was on YouTube.
It's about getting the message out there.
And Ellen Page did that show, Vanishing of the Bees. She did the voice of it. Yeah.
Oh.
She did the voice.
And Jerry Seinfeld was the bee movie.
Okay, I think our podcast is now done.
Yeah.
Now you're scraping the barrel. Do you have anything else
that's
of substance?
This last 5 minutes has had no substance in it.
This has been a little light on substance,
yeah.
Although I think mentioning the Daryl Hannah thing is important. I mean, I don't know. It seems like, well, first of all, if anybody knows Alan Page or Daryl Hannah, I'd love to interview them for the show. I'm not sure if they would be able to bring anything new to the permaculture stuff we talked about, but it is, and they're famous and all. Maybe their famitude would bring more listeners to my podcast. But I don't know. Plus, it's like, you know, everybody. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is you go and you watch them movies with these actresses in them, and then you kind of feel like you know. Although I kind of don't want to really know the gal that was in Kill Bill all that much. She was fucking creepy. So, but, you know, the babe from Splash, yeah, let's have her on the show. The sharp gal from Juno? Oh, yeah.
I'll be there watching.
Okay. All right.
Hey,
all right.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Oh, and it's crownbees.com.
So good. Nice job.
Yeah.
Paul.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And where are you? Permies.net? What was it?
No.
Oh.
Permies.com.
I'll go.
Dumbass.
I promise I'll go a little more next time.
So, if you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com.
Yeah.
See, that's permies.com, not that thing you were talking about, where we talk about mason bees, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.